It's the 1956 FAI Cup Final. Shamrock Rovers are playing Cork Athletic. But we're in a shop, not far from Dalyman Park. The late great Donie Ford, an administrator for Cork Athletic, has left the Cup Final with 20 minutes to go buy champagne. Athletic are 2-0 up and they're cruising. Rovers just haven't had an answer all game. The Cup is heading down south. Ford hands over the money, picks up the bottles and heads back to Dalymount. He quickens his pace as he hears the roar of the crowd. Was that another Athletic goal? Or the final whistle? He wants to get back before the Cup is handed over. He does make it back in time for the Cup to be handed over, but hold on. That's a Rovers player holding the Cup aloft. And in that moment, his stomach must have sank. Rovers had seemingly done the impossible. The 1956 FAI Cup Final will go down as one of the all-time greats. Not so much for the match as a whole, but for its finish. With 15 minutes to go, Cork Athletic were walking to the trophy. 2 up in the first half and Shamrock Rovers struggling to find any kind of breakthrough. Then, 3 goals in those last minutes turns the game on its head. Rovers were champions. And in a testament to the kind of man Donie Ford was, he dropped the champagne into the Rovers dressing room. Sometimes, it seems, this game just breaks your heart. Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin, and of course, Gary Spain. Coming up, we have another packed show for you as we look at that extraordinary 1956 Cup Final between Shamrock Rovers and Cork Athletic. Then the one that Gary's been waiting to talk about, Limerick, are the 1960 league champions. We also talk about European football as well, Drumcondra beating Bayern Munich 1-0, and some glamorous and not so glamorous European ties for Irish clubs in the 1960s, including a surprise win for Waterford over Northern rivals Glentoran. Plus, we talk about the great Shamrock Rovers side of the 60s who won six, yes, that's six FAI Cups in a row, and a Waterford side who would win 3 league titles in a row and 6 in 8 seasons. So, a lot to talk about, so let's get on with the show. So I suppose, Gary, in our last podcast, we kind of finished off in the late 50s and going into the 60s, hearing about, you know, the fantastic teams of those 50s, the St. Pat's and the Shamrock Rovers that were about to, become the ones, the Shamrock Rovers that we know today. I suppose, talk to us a little bit about from, I'd say, 1958-ish, 59, that kind of time in terms of the league and, I suppose, where the league itself actually was, I suppose, in the late 50s.
I think it was definitely a boom time for League of Ireland football. As I said, St. Pat's had won those 3 leagues. Certainly in Dublin, Shamrock Rovers were in their pomp. Drumcondra were a huge team in the north side as well. So Shamrock Rovers, I said, they'd won the league in 54. They'd actually won the cup in 55 and 56. And they came back in 57 and won the league. Drumcondra pipped them to the league title in 1958. Rovers were second. Drums had been second in 57. And back in 59, Rovers took the title back and they won it in 59. So it was very much, it was Dublin. The title wasn't leaving the capital at that stage. So I think it was thinking out loud here, but Cork Athletic had obviously won the title and retained the title in 50 and 51. Pats won it in 52. Mm. And it didn't leave the capital again then until until 1960 when it came to Limerick. Let's stick in the late 50s for a while. And I might mention a couple of cup finals that might slip under the radar. In 1956, Shamrock Rovers won the cup. And again, when I talked about the 54 title being iconic, the 1956 cup final is also iconic and maybe less so on Leaside because they were up against the great Cork Athletic side. And with 10 minutes to go, Rovers were beaten. The game was over. Cork Athletic were 2-0 up and the cup was won. It was heading down south. And Donie Ford, a legendary name in Cork football, There's a stand named after him in Turner's Cross. He was an administrator. I mean, I knew Donny in his later years. And look, he was a gentleman, a lovely man, and a legend of Cork football. But he left Daly Mount Park with 10 minutes to go out to a pub around the corner to buy the champagne to celebrate the cup win. And when he got back, the game was over and the cup was being presented. But it was being presented to a team in green and white hoops, because Shamrock Rovers scored 3 goals in the 10 minutes that Donny was gone.
Wow.
And being the gentleman that he was, he put the champagne in the Shamrock Rovers dressing room. But it was an incredible comeback, an incredible cup final, and one for the annals of Irish football history, but maybe not down for those down in Leaside. But I will mention 58 as well, and it was a defeat for Shamrock Rovers, and actually Dundalk, who they weren't... What would I say? They weren't much of a team in the 1950s. They shocked Cork Athletic after a replay to win the 1952 FAI Cup. And in 1958, when Shamrock Rovers were pushing for the title, Dundalk just avoided re-election by a couple of points in 1958. But they met in the cup final and Dundalk shocked them for a 1-0 win. So one of the... Actually, Dundalk have won a few shock FAI Cup finals over the years. Notwithstanding 52, 58, they won one in the, it was a 2002 when they shocked Shamrock Rovers as well, if I remember correctly. So there can be a few, Dundalk obviously won quite a lot of trophies, but quite a few of them were unexpected. And I think it's fair to say nobody expected them to win that 1958 FAI Cup.
Mm. But they did go on to be quite, I suppose, decent in the league in the 60s, didn't they? They won one or two and were runners up.
Yeah, so there was there are some stories. They won the league in 1963 and of course qualified for the European Cup and famously play FC Zurich and actually beat them in Zurich. But they also won the league. They were one of the teams to interrupt Waterford's great run. So when Waterford won the league in 66. Dundalk actually were champions in 1967 and they pushed Waterford all the way in 68. They were runners up in 68 as well. So I think kind of the early 60s was the start of a very successful era for Dundalk. Certainly in the 1970s, they were a powerhouse in Irish football into the 1980s. And of course, in recent years, obviously, they won so many leagues under Stephen Kenny, etc., and so successful under Vinnie Perth as well. But certainly that 1958 cup final win was a shock. But the league title was staying in Dublin from 1952 right up to 1959 when Shamrock Rovers were champions. As I said, the FAI Cup that year went to St. Patrick's Athletic. They beat Waterford after a replay. So they took the cup from Dundalk. And but Shelburne, it was back in Dublin. It was back in Dublin for the rest of the... it stayed in Dublin for the whole of the 1960s, actually, right into the 70s, because after Dundalk won it in 58, you had St. Pat's, Shelburne, Pat's again. Pat's beat Drums in 1961. Shelburne took the cup back again. Sorry, Shamrock Rovers hammered Shelburne in 62. Shelburne beat Cork Hibs for the second time in a cup final in 63. And then, of course, you had the famous Shamrock Rovers 6 in a row before Bowes made their comeback in 1970. So the cup was staying in Dublin for quite a long time after that Dundalk win in 58. But I must go on and talk about the 1960 league title, because I mentioned Limerick Sports National Trophy.
You've been waiting about 90 years of Irish footballing history podcasts to get to this very moment. Please, Gary, tell us what happened in 1959-60 season.
Yeah, so I have to, as I mentioned, Limerick had won a first national trophy in 1953, and the 1958-59, I mean, the Dublin City Cup was not that major a trophy, to be true, but it was a trophy, and it was a national trophy, and Limerick actually defeated Drumcondra, which was quite an achievement. They were champions in 57-58, so we beat Drumcondra in the cup final 4-3 in 58-59, And it laid down a marker for the 1959-60 season for Limerick. And it was a glorious season. Now, it was, I suppose it wasn't a vintage season in League of Ireland terms, because with 2 points for a win, Limerick won the league with only 30 points, which was, I think, a record low at the time, certainly for a 12-team league. So from 22 games, Limerick actually lost 7 of the games. But pointedly, of the 7 games that were lost, they were all away from home. So every Limerick had 11 home games in the Markets Field and won every single one of them. And ultimately, it was a league title that also one of the most exciting races in years, because going into the penultimate weekend, 6 teams actually could have won the title.
Wow.
And they were all meeting. So Limerick were playing Dundalk and in the Markets Field, and Limerick had to win. Dundalk had to win. Shamrock Rovers, I think Hibs were playing Celtic. I can't remember the exact ways of the fixtures, but on the second last day, everything went right for Limerick. So Limerick came from a goal down at half-time to beat Dundalk 2-1 with centre-half Jerry McCarthy scoring 2 goals. Huge game in the Markets Field. But not only did that win end Dundalk's challenge, other results fell in Limerick's favour. And suddenly Limerick had the title in their own hands. And not only did they have it in their own hands, they only needed a draw. So on the last day of the season, Limerick were away to St. Pat's, who were down in the bottom half, and they only needed a draw with Shelburne breathing down their necks. But Shelburne had to go to Cork to face Cork Celtic. But there's nothing Shelburne could do if Limerick got a draw on Dalymount Park. When I say Dalymount Park, it wasn't St. Pat's home ground, but as was very common in those days, for a big game, the Dublin clubs would move it to Dalymount to accommodate the crowd. And there was certainly a huge crowd. I mean, there were trains after buses leaving Limerick. There were thousands of Limerick people in Dalymount Park that day. And it was by no means an easy game, but Limerick was certainly expected to win the game or to at least take a point. And unfortunately, with 5 minutes to go, Limerick were drawing 2-2. And the league title was in the bag. And a very, very controversial winner, which is probably forgotten now in Limerick football, but it would certainly be talked about otherwise. St. Pat scored a very controversial winner to win the game 3-2. And had put the title in the hands of Shelburne, their Dublin rivals. And thousands of Limerick fans walked out of Dalymount Park. There was many a tear being shed. And my father was among them, and they were walking back, as you did in those days. You had to walk from Dalymount Park to Kingsbridge to get the train back to Limerick. And, of course, there was no internet, there was no mobile phones, but there were transistor radios. And word came through from Cork that Cork Celtic had beaten Shelburne and Limerick were champions.
Wow.
So the title was celebrated on various footpaths between Dalymount Park and Kingsbridge, as the word spread among the Limerick fans that Cork Celtic had beaten Shelburne and Limerick were champions. So it was the first league title, first time the title went to Limerick. And it was obviously a red letter day in the history of Limerick football. And they were champions at last.
I bet your dad has some stories about that day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of the things he said that were things were muttered, because it was like typical Limerick, the big day he blown it, you know, and it was, it's...
Like we mentioned before, it's such a Limerick way to win something, though, isn't it? Like, it's just so, like, by the skin of your teeth, last second type of stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, relying on other results, etc., you know, it was... Now, in fairness, Cork Celtic were a decent team in those days, but Shelburne would have been expected to win that game, you know. So,
what happens to Limerick after that? Because is it fair to say they drop off after that? They're not really title challengers for a long time after that.
Yeah, it's one of the big regrets, I suppose, in Limerick football. So, what actually happened to Limerick after that was Limerick signed a player manager by the name of Ewan Fenton, who was a legendary name, became, I mean, Ewan taught me to drive. He lived in Limerick, more or less for the, he opened up a motoring school and, I mean, passed away many years ago now, but he was a legendary figure in Limerick and he managed the club on a few occasions. But Ewan had been part of that famous Blackpool team that won the FA Cup in 1953 in the Stanley Matthews final, as it's known, when Stan Mortensen became the only man to score a hat-trick in an FA Cup final, or the first man to do it. And, of course, it gets named after Stanley Matthews finally winning his medal. But, of course, anyway, so Ewan was on that Blackpool team that won the Cup. He was actually a Scotsman from Dundee. And Ewan came as player-manager in 1960. But unfortunately, the directors in Limerick at the time made the fatal mistake to offload all. So we had a number of key Dublin players on the team. I mean, I have to admit, we had a lot of good local players like Jerry McCarthy, etc. We had Donie Wallace from Cork. And but we had players like Leo O'Reilly. Harry McHugh was actually a legendary player himself. But he was kind of the... an experienced old head who was training the players in Dublin. And it was a very good squad. But the club made the decision, the directors made the fatal decision to offload all the Dublin players because they were costing too much money. Oof. So we went with more of a local policy. And we also got rid of Donie Wallace, which was a tragic shame. I mean, he became a legendary player in Cork football. Obviously played for Hibs and everything for many years, right into the 70s. Ewan, now there was a lot of talent coming through on local. Look, we had a young goalkeeper by the name of Kevin Fitzpatrick who was 17 when he made his debut at the end of that season. But Pat Skelly had been, I mean, he was one of the players let go, a Dublin goalkeeper who was a very experienced player as well. So it was all change. Ewan Fenton, his task was to build up the young players. Now, he did an incredible job as Limerick manager. He was bringing through the likes of Kevin Fitzpatrick, Al Finucane, Joe O'Mahony, Mick Doyle. And Mick Doyle deserves to be remembered in those names, even though his career was cut short tragically in the 1965 FAI Cup final when he broke his leg and he was never really the same player again. But he was certainly as good as the Fitzpatricks, Finucanes and O'Mahonys. So there was a very good squad of young players coming through. Ewan Fenton was the ideal man to bring them along. But there was certainly, among the fans at the time, there was certainly regret that the likes of Leo O'Reilly, Donie Wallace, etc., even Harry McHugh, they should have been kept on for another couple of years. There could have been a lot more won by that scene, that squad.
I remember... a number of years ago when I started going to the Markets Field, I made the fatal mistake of turning around to somebody mentioned Al Finucane, and I said, who's Al Finucane? I've never heard of him before. And I got this glare as if I had just turned up out of a spaceship and walked onto the pitch, because Al turned out to be the leading all-time appearances holder, isn't he? Which, if we're being honest about it, is probably never going to be beaten.
In the League of Ireland, yes, absolutely. I mean, and Al, of course, he's a Limerick man. He began his career with Limerick. He famously captained Limerick to the 1971 FAI Cup triumph. He received 11 caps while at Limerick. He's the most capped Limerick FC player of all time. I don't think that's ever going to be beaten by a Limerick man, at the club. But and he was also captain on his last appearance against Austria in Linz. So, and as we talked about in the previous, he's the last Limerick-born player. Well, sorry, not Limerick-born, but player whose career developed in Limerick. So the likes of Don Givens and Steve Finnan were born in Limerick, but they both came up through the Dublin or the English system, if you know what I mean. Both left Limerick as very young, very, very young children. Mm-hmm. So Al was the last player born and came through the system in Limerick to actually receive a competitive cap for the Republic of Ireland. As I said, that was back in 1971. So unfortunately, a long, long, long time ago. And when you look at the likes, the number of players that Cork and Waterford are producing, really Limerick are definitely very much lagging behind these days.
Mm. If you can tear yourself away from that 19... 60 season. Gary, if we move on and kind of look at what comes after, because the 60s turns out to be quite a fascinating era in terms of the League of Ireland and what's happening and where the titles are going in the League of Ireland as well. So I suppose if we run on and go through, we'll say 61, 62, etc., and where the League of Ireland is then.
Yeah, so I mean, it's certainly at the top of the late 50s been a golden age, and certainly that certainly continued on into the 60s. Should briefly touched on the last podcast about European football. So our first game in Europe, obviously, was that Shamrock Rovers Manchester United tie in 1957. But European football obviously became an option for our clubs in the late 50s, running on to the early 60s. So there were some iconic games interspersed in that as well. But I mentioned Limerick won the league in 1960. Shelburne pushed us all the way. I should mention Shelburne defeated Cork Hibs to win the FAI Cup. So they did have some consolation. The following year, Drumcondra, so Limerick actually finished in the bottom half. We finished seventh. But Drumcondra actually regained the top spot. They won the League of Ireland title. They just pipped St. Pat's by a point to win the league, and St. Pat's got revenge by beating them in the FAI Cup final. So it was very much, that was of course a repeat of the 54 final. 62, Shelburne finally got their hands on another title. Shamrock Rovers of course hammered them in the FAI Cup final. 62 I suppose was another iconic year. It was actually the league title went to playoff. So it was Cork Celtic pushed Shelburne all the way, and they finished level on 35 points, and Shells actually beat them in a playoff. And if I remember correctly, they met late in the season, and Cork and Celtic had the chance to win the league, but they could only draw. And then that meant the Shells were able to get a playoff, and they won the playoff. They took the title. We go on to 63. Shells won the cup. They beat Cork Hibs in the cup. Dundalk, as we talked about, won the league title in 1963, and they went on to record a first famous away win for an Irish club in Europe when they beat Zurich 2-1. Maybe mention actually a much forgotten about game in 1962, because I see this. There's a game from the early 1990s, at 1991, I think. Was it 90 when Cork City famously drew with Bayern Munich? And there's many, many stories about that incredible day in Musgrave Park. Maybe one of them was that when Bayern Munich's hotel, the sauna was faulty, so they had to get a plumber in to fix the sauna. And the plumber that fixed the sauna was a guy by the name of Dave Barry, who not only did he fix the sauna for the Bayern Munich team, but he scored against them the next day as well.
What a story.
Yeah. But people still talk about that famous day when Cork City drew with Bayern Munich. And, of course, Shamrock Rovers very, very famously were 4 minutes away from knocking Bayern Munich out of Europe in 1966 in the European Cup Winners' Cup. When they'd drawn 1-1 in Dublin, they were drawing 2-2 in Munich. And in those days, the away goals rule was just in. And so Bayern had a goalkeeper by the name of Sepp Maier in those days, who Rovers had managed to put 3 goals past him.
Wow.
But unfortunately, there's another very, very, very famous name in German football broke Shamrock Rovers' hearts with 4 minutes to go, because a guy by the name of Gerd Müller popped up and scored the winner. So Bayern Munich actually won 3-2. And knocked Shamrock Rovers out. That Bayern Munich team went on to win the 1967 Cup Winners' Cup and win a first ever European trophy for Bayern. But they were 4 minutes away from going out. But it wasn't even that game I want to talk about, because Cork City pulled off a famous draw against Bayern Munich, and people talk about that. And many people will still remember Shamrock Rovers' famous draw against Bayern Munich. But Drumcondra didn't manage to draw with Bayern Munich, but they beat them 1-0 in Dublin. And nobody's even mentioning it or forgotten about it in 1962. Wow. Now, they were hammered in the game in Munich, but they remain the only Irish club to have ever beaten Bayern Munich. And I think a lot of us will all go to our graves without ever seeing anybody take that record away from Drumcondra.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Well, I have. I think there's little faith and there's reality. But,
we're holding out for the 1%. That's what we're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to be wrong.
But that's quite amazing. I mean, the win one. What do we know about that game? Was it where was it played?
So it was played in Talca Park. So Drumcondra actually had a lot of did some famous European runs in those days. I mean, they'd drawn Atletico Madrid in the late '50s when they were champions. They were playing against the likes of Nuremberg. Quite a few German draws. They drew Eintracht Frankfurt later on. And they lost the return. They lost 6-0 in Munich. So, I mean, it was in some ways a bit of a dead rubber, but they still managed to beat them. And I think it's fair to say the Bayern Munich side of 1962 wouldn't have been the household names that they actually became later in the 60s. Mm. You know, as I said, that was their first European trophy. Bayern Munich, when the Bundesliga started, I think in 63, Bayern Munich wouldn't have actually been in the first Bundesliga, because German leagues had been regionalized up to then. So they didn't actually join. Obviously, there is another team in Munich, 1860, and they were probably the original Munich powerhouses. But Bayern actually, I think if I remember rightly, Settmeier and Gerd Müller both came from 1860 to Bayern. And they were sharing a ground at the time as well. The current, actually, there's another tip for, if you want to see a real authentic German football experience, I would highly recommend the Grünwalder Stadium in Munich and go and watch 1860. They're down in the third division, but it's an iconic old stadium. There's a clock behind the goals, and I've stood under the clock on the terraces with the locals, and it's proper football. It's real passionate, and they're not exactly big fans of the other club in Munich. The unmentionable, who probably draw their fan base from all over Germany. But if you're in Munich itself, I think maybe possibly even more fans will actually support 1860 than Bayern. But it's an authentic and a very enjoyable football experience to go and watch 1860. But I'm going all over the place here. If you go back to that Drumcondra team had some famous results in Europe. They knocked out Odense, or an Odense 11. It's not quite the OB team that we know today in Denmark, but it was kind of a select team. But Drumcondra beat them in the Fairs Cup in the early 1960s as well. So there were some famous European results interspersed in that time. Shelburne famously drew Barcelona in 1963 and, of course, got to play in the Camp Nou against Barcelona. So
Was European football at the time, was it automatic, as in everybody went and played a European tie in an open draw, or was it something that you had to sign up to? Were you kind of like, yeah, you're the champions, but do you want to play in Europe?
Yeah, it was. If you go back maybe into the 1950s, when the European Cup started in 1955, Chelsea were the champions of England. And they were famously blocked by the FA from competing in the European Cup, which is still a bone of contention among Chelsea fans. But moving on from that, I mean, the champions were, I think, automatically pretty much after that went into the European Cup. It wasn't as lucrative as it is today, in that you got to keep your home gate, but you had to pay your travel expenses. So the draw was hugely important, particularly for the Irish clubs. So you really wanted a glamour tie, and you certainly didn't want a trip to Eastern Europe. So if you take, I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head now, but in 1964, Cork Celtic were drawn to play Slavia Sofia of Bulgaria. So that would have been a disastrous draw and an expensive draw. And a decade later, they got an even worse draw when they were drawn against the Soviet champions, which were at the time were Ararat Yerevan, which is obviously modern-day Armenia. But the costs and the journey for Cork Celtic in 1974 to go from Cork to Moscow onto Yerevan was absolutely incredible. And, of course, they lost their shirt on that game. So Celtic in their only European adventures were incredibly unlucky with the draws. But I mean, the likes of Shelbourne got Barcelona, Drumcondra got some crack German sides, they got Atletico Madrid. Shelbourne also actually drew Atletico Madrid. Shelbourne actually knocked out Belenenses of Portugal in the 1960s, which was another great win for Irish clubs in Europe. I'm probably going to forget a couple of those fantastic results, so apologies if I'm forgetting your club, but there were some iconic games, some very important games. I mean, Shamrock Rovers were drawn against Botev Plovdiv. So where Republic of Ireland are going in a couple of weeks to Plovdiv, Shamrock Rovers were there actually in 1962. So they'll have been the first Irish club and the only team since then to actually go to Plovdiv. And but back in 1962, that would have been a disastrous draw for Shamrock Rovers. I mean, Limerick in 1960 as champions were drawn against Young Boys of Bern, which was a very attractive game and drew a huge crowd to Thomond Park. Obviously, the big games were moved to Thomond Park in those days in Limerick. But Europe was hit and miss. The champions went into what was then the European Cup, as became the Champions League. The FAI Cup winners or the runners-up, if they lost to the champions, went into the Cup Winners' Cup. And then there was the Intercity Fairs Cup, which was a little bit of an anomaly. And I know UEFA today don't recognise the Intercity Fairs Cup as being part of their competitions, because there were, and I can understand the reasoning, but I kind of don't agree with it. You, to play in the Intercity Fairs Cup, you had to have a trade fair in your city. So Dublin at the time did, but Limerick and Cork didn't. So I'm pretty sure Limerick and Cork couldn't enter the Fairs Cup. And actually in 1965, Limerick got very lucky for qualifying for Europe, because the Shield winners in those days were qualifying for the Fairs Cup if they were eligible. So if a Dublin club won the Shield, they could play in the Fairs Cup. But if a Cork club or a Waterford club won it, then I'm pretty sure they couldn't. So
sorry, what do you mean by fair?
Is it a trade fair? So there were a lot of trade fairs around Europe. So nothing to do with football. So these were, I think you still have the Hanover Trade Fair. It was certainly a huge fair when I was working in the computer software industry. There was a lot of stuff went on in the. So there's still the Hanover Trade Fair. There'd be fairgrounds all over Europe, and there'd be still a lot of conference centres, a lot of these fairs happening. But back in the 1950s and 60s, there were probably a lot more of these. There was a lot of showcases for business. And so this Intercity Fairs Cup was limited to cities that had trade fairs. So, I mean, and another thing about it actually was there were some select sides played in it. So London actually reached the final of the 1958, if I remember correctly, Fairs Cup final. And that was a side comprised of Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, etc. And they were beaten by Barcelona in the final. I mentioned Drumcondra beat Odense in the Fairs Cup, because it was actually, I know the current club in the city of Odense in Denmark is known as OB, and I think they're an amalgamation of a few clubs. So Drumcondra actually played a select Odense 11. So the side that Drumcondra beat was actually, I know Galway actually played OB afterwards in Europe, but the side that Drumcondra met was a select from the city, so it wasn't just one club, it was maybe two or three. I can't remember how many clubs they would have had in Odense at the time in Denmark, but they came together to play in the Fairs Cup because obviously Odense had a trade fair at the time. But in 1965, Limerick qualified for Europe for a second time, even though they lost the FAI Cup final to Shamrock Rovers. Shamrock Rovers had already won the Shield and had opted to compete in the Fairs Cup, and they left Limerick then to play in the Cup Winners' Cup, even though Limerick didn't win the Cup.
Possibly the most random reason for the establishment of a cup that I might have ever heard of, but there you go.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about two teams specifically that make up the 60s. And I suppose on the one side you've got Shamrock Rovers winning all the cups, but then you have Waterford who are beginning on to take steps towards this extraordinary period in their own club's history as well. So I suppose maybe if we talk about the Shamrock Rovers team of that time, they win six in a row, they win seven out of eight FAI Cup trophies, an extraordinary haul in a short period of time. So explain to us, I suppose, number one, what is this dominance of cup that Shamrock Rovers come to have?
Well, I suppose even to this day, I think people talk about the dominance of Shamrock. I mean, they've won 25 FAI Cups. I mean, we've won two in Limerick. I can nearly tell you everything about it. There's nobody, except maybe, Robert Goggins in Shamrock Rovers probably knows everything about everything in Shamrock Rovers FAI Cups. But I don't think there's anybody else could tell you a chapter and verse about all the cups that Rovers won. And I mean, and there's stories to be told about, mm-hmm. I mean, they broke Limerick hearts, and I mean, there's just no bones about it. But I will talk about it. As you said, they won the 62 Cup, beating Shelburne 4-1 in the final. In 63-64, Shamrock Rovers were league champions. They won the league comfortably, beating Dundalk into second place. Dundalk, of course, had been the champions in 63, and they actually won a double. They defeated Cork Celtic in the FAI Cup final after a replay to start the incredible run of six in a row. And of course, six in a row hadn't been done before that. I mean, five in a row had been done, as we talked about, great. But of course, that was Shamrock Rovers as well in the 1930s. But anyway, so talk about cup specialists.
Yeah.
They won the cup in 1964, beat Cork Celtic after a replay. In 1965, I will be biased because I'll talk about Limerick. I mentioned Mick Doyle already, one of the greats of Limerick football. And I mean, Caelan, he passed away there a couple of years ago, but Mick was one of the greats. He broke his leg in the 1965 FAI Cup final. In Limerick terms, it was definitely one that got away. There are so many tales of heartbreak. When I grew up on the Poplar side in the 1970s, I mean, I first went to watch Limerick in the Markets Field in 1971. All I heard about were the tales of woe against Shamrock Rovers in the FAI Cup, going back to the 1940s, going back to Limerick going to Dublin and putting three or four past Shamrock Rovers in Milltown and beating them in the FAI Cup. But of course, it was a two-legged tie. And in those days, and Rovers came down to the Markets Field and put four past us in Limerick and knocked us out. But 1957, Limerick played them off the park in a semi-final. Rovers won after a replay. 1964, the start of the run, they came to the Markets Field. It was a cracking cup tie. Rovers edged. I think it was Eddie Balham got the goal. 64, they went on to beat Cork Celtic. Limerick, 1965, had never been to an FAI Cup final. Got all the way to the semi-finals playing, but the draw was incredibly unkind, very unlucky to draw champions elect from Condra, and really unlucky when goalkeeper Kevin Fitzpatrick fell ill on the day of the game. And in desperate time, Limerick grabbed a goalkeeper, I think his name was Eddie Connolly, who put him in goal against the champions elect, and somehow he had the game of his life, and Limerick won 1-0 and got to the cup final. Again, played Shamrock Rovers off the park. Rovers managed to survive, get a replay, and you never get a second chance against Rovers in the Cup. They were comfortable winners in the replay. A year later, same two teams back in the Cup final. There was to be no hard luck story that year. A couple of stories about that Cup final, though. In the 1966 Cup final, Rovers won the game comfortably by 2-0. No dispute, no hard luck story. It was the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising, and the FAI invited the survivors of the 1916 Rising to the game. Wow. There was a special invitation. They paraded them around the pitch before the game, etc. They did a lap of honour. And I'm just looking back at colour photographs of the two teams. And Shamrock Rovers, of course, wore their famous green and white hoops. if you look at the Limerick team, wore blue shirts as usual that day and white shorts, but they actually wore red socks. So I'm thinking back on the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising to go out in Daly Mount Park in red, white, and blue. Maybe faith wasn't...
against a green and white opponent.
against a team in green and white. But anyway, the green and whites won that day. But another story that day, Alfie Nuken, the legendary Limerick captain. And so Limerick had lost the cup for the second year in a row. There was absolute devastation in the laneway in Daly Mount Park. And Al is standing, being consoled by his family and friends. In the narrow lane is still there, but there were cars used to park in the laneway. And those, you know, you still see the odd car actually parking there today, but there were a lot of cars used to park, even when I was going there in the 70s and 80s. A lot of cars used to park in that laneway. So I think it was Ronnie Nolan was the captain. Forgive me if I got that one wrong. The captain changed for Rovers. But in 1966, Al, and there was a lot of tears being shed by Limerick people in that laneway. And Ronnie Nolan comes out of the dressing room, FAI cup under one arm, his kit bag under the other arm, somehow manoeuvres to get the boot of his car open, flings in the kit bag, flings in the FAI cup, slams down the boot, sits into his car and drives off. And the Limerick people were open-mouthed watching that. And in just the, I suppose, the contempt for the FAI Cup.
The hubris.
I mean, that's three in a row we've won. Yeah, we'll get it again next year. And of course, they did, of course. But I mean, Al was actually, he did say that, I mean, had that been going to Limerick, it would have been... there would have been chaired the whole way back. There would have been, and I mean, it did. 5 years later, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but Limerick won the cup eventually in 1971, and Al brought the cup back to Limerick. And on the train back, the crowds were so huge, they spilled onto the track. The train had to stop miles out of Limerick, and the players had to walk along the tracks to get into the station, to the tens of thousands of people there to celebrate. And I know I actually started going to watch Limerick at 4 years of age. I have no memory of us actually winning the cup. But I know my father and others will say that that was the greatest day in Limerick's football history. Even though the two league titles have come to Limerick, that the FAI Cup finally coming to Limerick in 1971, captained, of course, by Al Finucane, Hughie Hamilton and Davy Barrett with the goals, Kevin Fitzpatrick in goal. A lot of that team were... sadly no longer with us, but thankfully we have Kevin and Al, etc. But I have jumped ahead too much, but going back to that Shamrock Rovers team of the 60s, an incredible team. They won the cup in 67 again. They beat Pats in 1968. I mean, the two teams of Irish football, Shamrock Rovers and Waterford, met in the final of the FAI Cup. Waterford, of course, had been champions again, but they couldn't get their hands in the cup as Rovers beat them. Cork Celtic bookended that six in a row. They were beaten by a replay in 64. They were beaten in a replay in 69. Another hard luck story for Limerick. I know I'm showing all my bias here, but they were Celtic needed four games to get to that cup final. They beat Limerick after four matches between Cork and Thomond Park and Daly Mount Park. And certainly in a couple of those, Limerick felt that the it was one that got away, but Rovers, again, won the cup in 69. They won six in a row, an incredible achievement, topping that famous five in a row of the 1930s. So what do you say? I mean, I'm going to forget names, but the likes of, I mean, Paddy Mulligan was on that team. Frank O'Neill, there was some, I mean, Mick Leach banging in the goals. I mean, some incredible players. That was a great Rovers team, legendary Rovers team.
And it's interesting to say that, because if we look at the other side of the League of Ireland side, it makes it even more interesting, I think, that you've got this team of perennial cup winners, and then you have a Waterford team that comes along in the mid-60s and begins to win all those league titles. They win four league titles out of the last five seasons of the 60s. And it's 1970. So what you have is this kind of a team on one side that's fantastic at the sprint, but can't quite make the marathon. And on the other side, a team that makes the marathon, but can't quite finish off the sprint. So there's two contrasting styles of where the directions of those cups went.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's incredible that Waterford team didn't win an FAI Cup. And maybe you could say it's incredible that the Shamrock Rovers team did win the league in 64, but of course they didn't win the league for another 20 years after that.
Mm.
They did lose in the playoff in 71 to Cork Hibs. I know I did talk in the last podcast, the Waterford League win of 65-66 was a total bolt from the blue. I mean, they did just pip Shamrock Rovers to the title, and a famous 1-0 win in Milltown. It was in that incredible winning run when they went on a credible one, I think 11 games on the bounce in a 22-game season to come from nowhere to win that league. And it was actually Limerick that... we get another Limerick plug in, because I think they'd won 11 games on the bounce and they faced Limerick in Kilcoyne Park, I think around St. Patrick's Day 1966, give or take. I'm not sure if it was exactly St. Patrick's Day, but Limerick went down to Kilcoyne Park and got a famous draw. It was one of the games that I remember being talked about. And of course, it would have only been the recent past in the early 70s, but it was a famous draw for Limerick and to end Waterford's incredible run. It wasn't enough to stop them winning the title, of course. They did win the title that year. I suppose Dundalk took the title the following year. Waterford didn't really compete. But it's really maybe the league-winning team, the three in a row from 68, 69, 70. Well, we're talking about So Waterford had won the league, as I said, in 1966. It was their first ever league title. It was definitely a bolt from the blue. They came from behind. Dundalk won it the following year. Waterford weren't really at the races. They were top three or four, but they weren't competing for the title. But it was the three in a row team in 68, 69, 70 that really established that great Waterford team. And of course, 5 and 6 seasons ultimately. But they beat Dundalk to the title in 1968, including a famous win in the Markets Fielding. Johnny Matthews got the goal. Limerick, of course, had actually twice beaten that Waterford team in the FAI Cup in a couple of epic cup ties, which helped stop that cup side. But when it was, as you say, in the grind over 22 or 26 matches as it became, Waterford were ultimately came out on top. So they won the league in 68, lost the cup final, of course, to Shamrock Rovers, won the league in 69. Rovers were a distant second, but of course, Rovers won the cup, beating Cork Celtic. And in 1967, Rovers pushed them a bit more, but Waterford were champions again for the three in a row.
So if we just roll back to 66-67, they're fifth in the league or mid-table in the league. And so they turned it around into three in a row and eventually 5 out of 6. So what happens for that to happen, and like, can you give us a makeup of this Waterford team? What makes it so good to go on a run of three in a row like this?
So I suppose I should clarify, and this is still maybe a little bit of a debate in Waterford footballing circles, but the team that won it in 1966 was probably quite different from the team that won the other five. So John O'Neill, I think officially, I'm not sure if that's still correct, is the only man to have won all 6 league medals in that team. So there was a bit of a change from 66 up to 68. I did mention Johnny Matthews on a previous podcast. The rules were pretty strict in those days, and you didn't get a league medal unless you played so many games.
Mm.
Johnny Matthews came in midway through that season and he won the league for Waterford. But I think technically he didn't qualify for a league medal. I'm not sure if he ever got one. He definitely deserved one. He made a huge difference. They probably wouldn't have won the league without him. And but the team that probably the famous legendary Waterford team that won the 5 out of 6 had names like, so Peter Thomas came as the goalkeeper from 67, 68 on, legendary goalkeeper for Waterford. I might be getting a couple of years out here, but the likes of Alfie Hale probably won most of those league titles. There's a couple of these players disappeared for a year or two, so I might be forgetting. But as I mentioned, the likes of John O'Neill, you had the, obviously the legendary Johnny Matthews. You had Jimmy McGough in that Waterford team. Again, I'm really going to apologise because I'm going to forget some legendary, legendary names in Waterford football. Tommy Taylor had been the original goalkeeper, of course, but Peter Thomas took over. There's other names in Waterford football that I'm really struggling with, but incredible names. So they won, they dominated the league title, as I said, winning 5 out of 6. They won the 3 in a row in 68, 69 and 70. They were beaten in 1971, Cork Hibs and Shamrock Rovers. They only pipped them by a point. So Waterford finished in third place, a point behind Rovers and Hibs. And of course, there was a famous test match for the title that Hibs won in Ballymount Park. So that was Cork Hibs' only League of Ireland title. And in 1972 became one of the most iconic final days of Irish football and the league title, in that the champions Cork Hibs played Waterford in Fleur Lodge on the last day. And Waterford came needing a draw to win the title. Hibs had to win. And they were due to meet a week later in the FAI Cup final. And 25,000 people packed in the Fleur Lodge.
Wow.
It was absolutely mobbed. Massive game. Many, many of them had travelled from Waterford. And it was a disaster for Waterford. They were 2-0 down. And they were down to 10 men with about 10 or 15 minutes to go. And you can, there are thousands of people in Waterford will talk about that iconic day. But the reality is most of them were east of Yall by the time Johnny Matthews started the comeback. So with 10 men from 2-0 down, Waterford came back to win 3-2 and win the league title.
Wow.
But very, 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 very few Waterford men were in the stadium that day. And I know a friend of mine, he's now deceased from Waterford that day, said to a few people that he saw walking out, because he did stay till the end. He always stayed till the end, that they were streaming out of Fleur Lodge that day. And they didn't get to see probably the most iconic day in the history of Waterford football, when you're 2-0 down with 10 men to come back and win 3-2. And it broke Cork hearts as well in Fleur Lodge. And a week later, obviously, how could Cork Hibs come back from the devastation of throwing away the league title? Well, they met a week later in Ballymount Park. And what was the result? A 3-0 win for Hibs. Moya Dennehy with a hat-trick. I mean, incredible. I mean, Waterford's name had to be on the cup at that stage. And somehow they contrived to lose it. But, I mean, what a win for that Waterford team in 1972. And a year later, they won their 6th and last ever. Well, say last ever. They're sitting top of the league as we talk. But Waterford won the title in 1973. They pipped Finn Harps by a point. It was the closest, I think, Harps have ever come to winning a title. But I should actually jump back to a couple of teams that came into the league in the 1960s as well, because I mentioned Finn Harps there. Drogheda actually joined the league in 1963-64, if I remember correctly. They joined along with Sligo Rovers, with transport going out. But Sligo Rovers returned having been out for a year. But in 69-70, we had two new clubs again joined the league, which were Athlone Town and Finn Harps. And Athlone Town, of course, had been in the league in the 20s, but Finn Harps were the first Donegal representatives in the League of Ireland. And a lot of people talk Finn Harps' introduction to League of Ireland football was, what can I say, well, welcome to the league. They were home to Shamrock Rovers in the Dublin City Cup, and the scoreline was 10-2 to Shamrock Rovers.
Ouch.
And it was welcome to the League of Ireland. But what a lot of people forget about that day, or well, sorry, that day or that season, they were beaten 10-2 at Finn Park. But Finn Harp's next competitive defeat at Finn Park that season was on the last day of the season when Waterford came to Finn Park needing a win to win the League of Ireland title, and Waterford duly beat them. So Harps went on beaten from that 10-2 win to Waterford coming to Finn Park. And so in reality, people remember the 10-2, but they don't remember Finn Harps had an incredible first season, particularly at home. Okay, they only finished in mid-table, but it was certainly Fortress Finn Park in those days. So the 1960s, we saw Drogheda, Athlone Town and Finn Harps, of course, joining the League of Ireland. Another story, I mean, I should probably mention the great Waterford European ties of the 1960s and 1970s, and a very, very brave step. And it sounds ridiculous now, but in 1927, the national team had played one game in Lansdowne Road against Italy. I'm not sure why Dalymount Park wasn't used. But the cost of using Lansdowne Road, even though it had so many seats compared to Dalymount, was considered too prohibitive for football. But in 1968, Waterford, they qualified for Europe, obviously, in 1966 as league champions, and they drew the East German champions, Vorwärts, from Berlin, as they were then. And it was a bad draw. They were beaten, hammered home and away, and they had to play in Dalymount Park because Kilcone Park wasn't deemed up to scratch in those days. But in 1968, I talked before about the need in Europe to get a big draw to make some money. Well, in 1968, Manchester United became the first English club to win the European Cup. And if an Irish club was hoping for a big draw, there was only one draw for Waterford in 1968, and they were looking at the draw. Okay, they might have wanted Celtic as Scottish champions. They'd won the league in 67, but Manchester United were drawn out of the hat to play Waterford.
Wow.
What a draw. And it was kind of expected they'd have to bring the game to Dublin and play it in Dalymount Park. But they took the incredibly brave decision to play it in Lansdowne Road. And there was a lot of discussion because the cost and the rent at that time was a lot higher than Dalymount Park. And it sounds madness, and it actually turned out to be madness. Saying, well, what's the risk with playing Manchester United? There was no risk. The game was totally sold out. And I spoke to long-term, recently deceased Peter Quinn from Limerick, who there were so many buses and trains from Waterford to the Dublin public. There was a special train from Limerick, and he was on the train. He said hardly anybody on the train got in because the demand for tickets, the game was already sold out. It was absolutely mobbed. There was tens of thousands of people outside the European champions, and it was not just any European champions, it was Manchester United, it was George Best, it was Dennis Law, it was Bobby Charlton, it was our own Shea Brennan and Tony Dunn. I mean, they were on that, the Irish, Alex Stepney in goal, except there was Irish involvement in that team as well. And what a draw it was for Waterford to play them in Lansdowne Road. And I mean, the FAI didn't actually take the risk again of going to Lansdowne Road for another 3 years until they played Italy in 1971. But Waterford actually, they were back there against Galatasaray in 1969. And in 1970, there was another iconic European Cup tie between Waterford and Glentoran, the Irish League champions. And I should tell a tale about that because that was an all-conquering Glentoran side. They were incredibly strong, and they were also unbeaten. They were on an unbeaten run at home in Europe. And when I say an unbeaten run at home in Europe, that was 1966, they drew with Rangers. In 1967, they played Benfica. I talked about the Man United team that won the 68 European Cup final. They beat Benfica in the final.
That's right.
They beat Benfica, a Benfica team that qualified for that final by knocking out Glentoran in the first round, a Benfica team that escaped with a famous lucky one-all draw, thanks to Eusebio at the Oval, and eked out, I think, a nil-all draw at the Stadium of Light and knocked out Glentoran. If I remember rightly, it was on the away goals rule, but they were certainly very fortunate to draw. A year later, Glentoran drew with Anderlecht, and after those famous draws with Rangers and Benfica and Anderlecht, Arsenal came to the Oval in 1969, And they didn't draw. They beat them 1-0. Arsenal did win the return. I think were beaten 3-0 at Highbury. But so Glentoran were on an incredible run in Europe. And they were hot favourites for this tie. And another reason they were hot favourites was because in Jimmy McGough's testimonial, the champions of the League of Ireland played the Irish League champions in Kilcone Park. And it was a 9-goal thriller. 8-1 to Glentoran. That was in April, May 1970. Now, there is a story about that game, and I did actually, I spoke to the late Johnny Matthews, and I said, because I'll go on to talk about the European Cup ties, that, what happened? And he said, well, we won the league on the Sunday in Ballybuffet, and we got on a bus, and we were champions, and it was a huge day. We'd won 3 in a row. And it's a long, long way from Ballybuffet to Waterford on a bus in 2025. In the 1970, the roads from Ballybuffet to Waterford, I'll tell you, it was a hell of a journey. And there might have been
a few beverages,
some celebrations, a few beverages consumed. And they got off the bus on, probably, I would say definitely in the early hours of Monday morning. I think it was a bank holiday Monday, he said. They got off the bus. I think I'm remembering this correctly. And they got off the bus. And, of course, they had a testimonial for Jimmy McGough the next day. Now, testimonials weren't taken that seriously. But then you had the champions of the Irish League, champions Glentoran, the champions of Northern Ireland, huge team, the likes of, who needs Eusebio? We've got Walter Bruce. They're coming down to Kilcone Park, and they wanted to prove themselves, and they won 8-1, and they didn't let up. Fast forward a few months later, and this unbeaten record, Rangers, Anderlecht, Benfica, Arsenal, came to the Oval, and none of them could win. Waterford came to the Oval, and they weren't given much of a chance. But this was Johnny Matthews, this was Alfie Hale, this was Jimmy McGough, this was Peter Thomas. And they went to the Oval and they won 3-1.
Wow.
And they came back to Kilcone Park and they beat them 1-0, beat them home and away. And an incredible win for Waterford and a huge shock for Glentoran. And what a reward for Waterford, because by beating Glentoran in the first round, when the draw came through for the next round, they were drawn against the runners-up of the 1970 European Cup. And the winners of the 1967 European Cup, Celtic. And of course, it was no decision. Lansdowne Road, here we come. And
amazing what you can do when you haven't been drinking all the way to a football match.
Well, exactly. It was obviously a very different Waterford team. And actually, I think the fact that they were beaten 8-1 obviously lulled Glentoran into a bit of false sense of security. Because it would have been... Now, there were All-Ireland Cups in those days, so teams were meeting as well, but it was different levels of responsibility for certain teams. And I mean, testimonials were very much hit and miss in those days.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you as well, just before we wrap up this episode of the podcast, from the mid-60s onwards becomes an extraordinary story, I think, for the next decade and a half, because we see Bohemians win 2 league titles. But all the other league titles go to somewhere else in the country. They don't go to a Dublin club, which for anybody that's been listening to the podcast through to here is quite extraordinary. What is happening at this kind of, from the mid-60s onwards, where there's this kind of big power shift to the likes of Waterford, Dundalk, Sligo, etc.? What's happening in that? The Dublin teams perhaps are losing their way a little bit, and other teams are coming forward to take their place, but not in Dublin.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a power shift. I suppose we should mention Bohemians first of all, because we wouldn't have talked about them that much from the late 40s into the 50s into the 60s. They finished rock bottom in 1968 when Waterford were champions. They finished rock bottom in 1969. But what happened, Bohemians were very much the gentleman amateur club. And I suppose football had moved on. So as an amateur team, a fan-owned club, they're certainly very proud, and rightly so, of being a members club, of being a fan-owned club, a proud history dating back to 1890. They won so many trophies in the Irish. They won the Irish Cup up north when it was an All-Ireland competition. They were the all-conquering team in the late 20s, hugely successful into the 30s, into the 40s. But football moved on. Professionalism moved on. Shamrock Rovers, Drumcondra, Pats and Shelburne were ruling the roost in Dublin. But in 1969, Tony O'Connell made the decision for Bohemians to turn professional. And that transformed that club. They actually won the FAI Cup in 1970, beating Sligo Rovers after three games, eventually. And as you say, we can go on to talk about the 70s when they became the powerhouse in Dublin football. But certainly in the early 70s, when I first started going to the League of Ireland, 71, 72, 73, the two big names. So Shamrock Rovers were always a name in Irish football. But even though they lost the 71 title after a playoff, they actually went into decline. So for the first half of the 70s, Shamrock Rovers were not really competing for trophies. They weren't competing for the FAI Cup or competing for the league title. They'd been knocked out of the cup famously in 1971. Drogheda came to Milltown. I think he put five past them in the cup. Huge, huge win for Drogheda, of course. But the even though Limerick won the cup in 71, it was Cork Hibs, champions in 71, winning the cup in 72 and 73. Waterford winning the league in 70, winning the league again in 72 and 73. So Dundalk, of course, were again becoming a powerhouse as well. So it was kind of a shift away from Dublin to the provinces, whether that be Cork, Waterford or Dundalk.
Is there a reason for that? Is there, you know, I've done obviously a little bit of research, but there seems to be that attendances are declining a little bit at Dublin clubs. Some things, maybe the socio-economic kind of situation is changing within Dublin as well, with people, you know, perhaps having more money, better jobs, etc. And it changes people's viewpoint about what they want to do and how they want to do it, etc. The advent of television, of course, as well, that becomes very popular beginning in the mid-60s, etc. in Ireland. So there's a number of factors that are kind of a spinning in the background to perhaps begin to push people away from regularly attending games. Is that fair or unfair? I'm not quite sure.
It's kind of, I think there could be a number. I think television and the other options on a Sunday afternoon was certainly a factor. I mean, it's certainly true that if the latter half of the 50s right into the 60s were the halcyon days of League of Ireland football attendance-wise, they certainly had fallen off a cliff in the early 70s. Interest in the national team had gone down. Attendances at cup finals dropped in the 70s. But having said that, the Cork Hibs, and they maybe delayed the downturn in the early 70s because Waterford was still playing to huge crowds. Mm-hmm. And even Waterford went to Dublin, they were a huge draw. Cork Hibs were playing to huge crowds in Flower Lodge. Cork Celtic were drawing big crowds in Turner's Cross. So I think the big crowds were still going to League of Ireland football in the early 70s, but they were going to Kilcone Park, Turner's Cross and Flower Lodge. I know Limerick, I started going, the crowds in Limerick in 71, 2, 72, 3 were actually tiny. Even though Limerick had won the cup, there was a downturn. And I suppose I was 4, 5, 6 years of age. I would only have been brought if there wasn't a big crowd. So maybe it worked out like that. But the big draws were Hibs, Waterford, Celtic, and even though Bowes were winning the leagues winning a couple of leagues in the mid 70s, and the crowds were way down in what the likes of Rovers and Drums would have drawn at the time. I mean, Drums went down football in 1972-3. Midway through the season, they were amalgamated and then replaced by Home Farm. I went back and talked about Sam Prowell telling Waterford to pull their socks up at the 1965 league meeting. Yeah. Waterford won 6 of the next 8 league meeting league titles. And as they were winning their 8th, there was no Drumcondra left. I mean, that's unthinkable. I mean, that would be the equivalent of saying in 8 years' time, Shamrock Rovers won't exist, and Waterford will win six of the next eight league titles. Who knows? Maybe they will. But
never say never in the League of Ireland. Rovers,
Shamrock Rovers will definitely exist, but I'm not sure if Waterford will win six of the next eight league titles. But it was, I mean, and the crowds definitely fell off a cliff. Drumcondra were playing to small crowds in the early 70s. Most of the Dublin clubs were. There were still big crowds in Flower Lodge. But then Cork, after 74, football in Cork took a huge downturn. And, I mean, Hibs were out of football by 76. Mm. Celtic, they had some turbulent times, let's say, in the mid-1970s. And I'm not even sure if I can say much more than that, but there were some interesting owners in Cork Celtic and some interesting decisions and interesting people being banned from, including the press, banned from Turner's Cross at the time. But Celtic were voted out of the league, actually, in 1979. They didn't receive re-election. And, I mean, I remember going to Cork Celtic Limerick. It was a midweek game. It was refixed. It was called off, actually, on Christmas Eve, 1978. And my dad drove down to Flower Lodge. Celtic played their last season in Flower Lodge for whatever reason. And it was a miserable, wet, midweek afternoon. No floodlights, working day. There was less than 100 people in the stand in Flower Lodge. We were the only two there from Limerick. It was a miserable nil-all draw. It was a very forgettable game. And that was the last time we got to see Cork Celtic. You know, they went out of football at the end of that season.
Wow. Yeah, it's extraordinary time in Irish football, and I think we're going to look at that maybe again in the next episode as well, as to what happens in the 70s and the 80s as well. As ever, Gary, extraordinary stuff with some great stories and some wonderful facts about the League of Ireland and how it's developed, and some extraordinary stories about some of the great teams, that Waterford team, that Shamrock Rovers team, just amazing teams that just made up the League of Ireland at the time as well. And of course, those trips into Europe as well, which do no harm, etc. Unless, of course, you get one in our media, by the sounds of it. But
look at the draw. I mean, Cork Celtic get to go to Yerevan and Waterford get to go to Manchester and Glasgow.
Brilliant. All right, Gary, till next time. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget you can support us on Patreon for just €5 a month, where we put that money back into the podcast to get more ears listening to us. Just go to patreon.com/greenshootspodcast. That's patreon.com/greenshootspodcast. Please share the podcast on your socials and WhatsApp and spread the word about the show. Remember to support your local League of Ireland club. It's our heritage. It's our game. Until next week, bye for now.